Hello, my friends, and welcome to another week of Visiting Springwood. Yes, yes, because this is Welcome to Prime Time, the Freddy's Nightmares podcast, and we have quite a show for you today because we're going back to school.
Back to school.
And I tell you, I get no respect. No respect over here.
Back to school, indeed. That's one thing that I've noticed about the series, which, you know, go figure, you have a series about a killer that goes after teens in their sleep. There's a lot of school in this show.
Well, you know, it's weird. You wouldn't think, right? But, hey, Stranger Things, right?
They really get their use out of Springwood High School.
Well, yes, they do, and it's never the same place. Well, it's not never, but I feel like this time around it was not the same school they'd used, like, during the Lori Petty episodes.
I think they may have used, like, one of the outer shots when...
Exterior?
Exterior, thank you. That's
the word.
It's
okay. One of us went to film school and the other one didn't.
Shut it. One of the exterior shots, I think, is definitely one that they've used repeatedly, especially with the twin episode and I think Lori Petty's episode. But yeah, for the most part, yeah, they definitely changed locations.
Yeah, a little bit. But you could also say that they're in different parts of the school because we didn't see the same people, the same faculty members and things like that. So, but yeah, so today's episode is season one, episode 15, School Days.
School Days.
D-A-Z-E. And remember, if you're listening to this and you want to join in on watching, we watch these on Tubi TV, where they are free with commercials. So if you want to find the link, it is in the show notes of every episode. But you can also just go to tubitv.com or tubi.tv or tubi.com.
So there's like three different ways.
They all work. Yeah. They all work. So that's where you can watch the show. But yes, we have quite an episode. I was very pleased with this one.
I liked this one because it kind of preyed on a fear that I used to have when I was a student. So we'll get to that.
Dying in your sleep?
That, of course. But
oh, yeah, yeah. So, makes sense.
Season 1, Episode 15, School Days. The original air date was February 11th or 12th, 1989. This is directed by Michael Klein, who did a 9 to 5 TV show, She's the Sheriff TV series, of course. And he also... was a director on the teleplay of writer on the teleplay of No More Mr. Nice Guy. Hasn't really done anything else. Like, this is the only really directing credit he has for the show. Then we go into writer of David Ehrman. He wrote Mother's Day and also is on the teleplay of No More Mr. Nice Guy. But he also has written for multiple shows and is still writing today. Some of the ones for him were Adventure of Super Mario Brothers, the cartoon. He did the commish with... Michael Chiklis, La Femme Nikita, the TV show, and he's still actually writing today on a show called Greenleaf that is out. So,
oh, cool.
But yeah. Mother's Day writer, I'm all in for this episode, so I was already excited when we got to it.
You have quite a fondness for Mother's Day.
Mother's Day and Rebel Without a Car have probably been two of my biggest favorites, and they were back-to-back, which made it even better.
Are you sure you just weren't in a good mood that week?
I mean, it could be, but at the same time, those are just great episodes. Just to grab somebody onto the show, those are great starting episodes.
They are. No, I'll agree. Although No More Mr. Nice Guy is kind of the ultimate.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
Everybody wants to see the Freddy prequel.
So, and you get it by Toby
Hooper. Oh, Freddy at his most child hungry of all time.
So School Days opens with a beautiful wide shot of what we can assume is to be the metropolis of Springwood, Ohio. We are up high, and we cut to a white limousine cruising down the street. We go inside the limousine and meet our main character, Steve Dart, who's played by Andrew Krauss, the only writing credit or only acting credit he has on IMDb. He did nothing else.
He used a fake name.
He could have used a fake name. That is true, but that's the only thing I could find under him.
The lead?
Mm-hmm.
The only IMDb credit
is this.
Is Freddy's Nightmares.
Yes.
Wow. Because he was pretty good. He was pretty good.
We also meet his father, Sam Dart, who's played by David J. Partington. He started in the late 70s. He did L.A. Law, Dallas. He played the coroner in Death Wish 4, The Crackdown. And he's also in one of you and I's favorite films, The First Power from 1990 with Lou Diamond Phillips.
I do enjoy The First Power quite a bit.
So him and his father are in the limousine. He's commenting on his son's Nobel Prize winning. Steve, who's dressed in a white tux with two babes at his side sipping champagne, goes on to explain that he won two Nobel Prizes.
Now, I need to point out that in the cart of champagne, there was just a turkey baster.
Yeah. Because that's part of his invention, apparently.
That's my kind of party. That's all I'm saying.
So he's won two Nobel Prizes, one of which was curing the common cold with his nasal decongestion device that we are told also brought about world peace, because he comments that all of man's aggressions were centered in the sinuses.
I'll tell you, because I was just in northern Michigan where it was very dry.
Yeah.
He's on to something.
He might be.
He might be.
So he takes a sip of the champagne, toasts with the babes, and suddenly we cut into a close-up of Steve, who is actually being yelled at by his father as they sit in front of the school parked outside in the truck.
And can we just take a moment to appreciate this young man's mullet?
Oh, we absolutely
can. Just a mullet, like that 80s coiffed Uncle Jesse style mullet.
Well, not just the mullet. Can we also appreciate that he's basically dressed like Ducky from Pretty in Pink? He's got the jacket. Yeah. He's got the shades.
Yeah, he is. And then when he talks to a girl when he's coming and she's dressed like a complete, marm.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to put it. Like a school marm or something. So he's talking to his dad. His dad's basically saying, if you get in trouble anymore, you're dead meat.
And this is definitely like a shout out to the Breakfast Club with Emilio Estevez and his father, because it's the same thing. They're parked in front of the school. He's getting ready to go in. He's like, you got to focus. Like, I can't keep doing this.
If you spill paint in the garage one more time.
So his father is telling Steve that next time he has to leave work, because he got in trouble at school, he's going to yank him out of school and put him in a garage changing tires, because you don't need a high school diploma for that.
Well, I mean, he's not wrong. I like how he's like, I will threaten you with gainful employment.
Yeah, gainful employment.
I mean, maybe it's just because I'm in my 30s now, so I understand that a little bit differently.
Yeah.
He also mentions that there's no mom.
Yeah, he says that he's tired of being both mom and dad to him and his brother, and that he can only do so much. Basically, he's visually frustrated with what's going on with Steve in class.
Yeah, and I want to say, single parent. Weird. I wonder if their mom, died in her sleep or something else random.
So Steve's dad advises him that he has to pick up his brother at 4 after school. Steve then tells him he can't do it because he has a study hall. His dad asked, do you mean detention? Steve inquires that he has been served the detention for being late twice because of dropping off Chris in the morning, and that he cannot miss it. Steve's dad begs him to, because Chris needs to get home and be fed. So then he leaves, gets out of the car, and walks towards the school.
I just realized we never meet Chris.
We never do.
Not once.
No, not once.
Not a once.
Like, we never see sibling. Steve's home life, ever.
Yeah, no, we don't. before we get to, we're both laughing because we know Freddie's part is coming right up. Dave, what kind of a student were you in high school?
So I wasn't a bad student. I was probably like the.
Hold on, I'm patching your mom in.
Shut up. The toughest subject that I struggled with was math. Math was one that keep good grades in. As far as like history, English goes, I'm actually was pretty good at that. And also when
were you a piece of shit is the question we wanted
to know. I did my homework.
You did?
My homework.
You did homework?
I did my homework.
People actually did homework?
Yes. I mean, given, we would do it sometimes right before the class in a previous class, but I would get that homework done.
Who did homework?
Dude, there was one time we had completely off subject, but one time we had a teacher, our math teacher, that said we could do this extra credit math homework. And then when people didn't do it, he gave them a bad grade because he basically stated that extra credit should always be done. So even though he said it wasn't mandatory, he still graded people like it was. He got in a lot of trouble for that because angry parents called.
Well, yeah, because that's, but the kids learned a valuable lesson, which is authority figures lie and are incompetent. I've always said teachers and principals are like practice police, so you can learn what idiots most people who are in charge are. They're like practice police and practice politicians. Yeah. You're going to learn very quickly how much you hate them. So, did homework. That
I only got like in trouble in regards of school on the bus. I got a Saturday school one time because of bus behavior, because I hated taking the school bus.
School?
Yeah, I had a Saturday school.
Why'd you have Saturday school?
Because I was in a ring of kids that got rounded up for bullying one kid, even though we kind of all bullied each other.
Oh, and then he ended up catching on fire and running into the lake.
That's exactly what happened. Found the him. Burning, yes.
Oh,
yes.
Or was it a prank in the shower,
And slaughter and we gave him a joint and he smoked it.
Yeah, and then, wait, so... I like how you were like, I really never got in trouble. The one time I got in trouble was for stuff on the bus, like, because on Saturday school. But you just gloss over that Saturday school is a major discipline.
No, no. That's, I got Saturday school for the bus behavior. That was only got a Saturday school because
literally. I thought you were saying that being on the bus to Saturday school is what
makes
you a jerk.
This pisses me off because my parents were given the option. It was either you get suspended off the bus for a week or you go to Saturday school. Everyone else got suspended off the bus for a week. And my parents are like, Saturday school.
Yeah, I could see Pop the Doyer being like, I ain't driving your smelly ass to school every morning.
There's a reason that I rode, like, you know where my parents live. There's a reason I rode my bike to school before I got my license in high school, because I couldn't fucking stay on the bus.
Well, and because you lived in a small town.
Small town, but that was still like at least a 3.5-4 mile bike ride in the morning to start.
I mean, no, that's a good way to get the blood pumping.
Yeah.
I was well behaved enough and academically completely disinterested. So that was me. Like, I would have teachers who would be like, why don't you apply yourself? And I'd be like, why would I?
Yeah.
Like what do I get? Like, you get an education. I'm like, I learn stuff every day.
Yeah.
I was the worst. We'll delve more into my horrors of education later. But anyway, so we're about to be treated to Freddy.
Yeah. So we go with Steve, who runs into Julie, who's played by Lisa Fuller. Did you recognize Lisa Fuller by chance?
You mean from Monster Squad?
Patrick's sister from Monster
Squad. Of course I did.
She's in
a total baby.
Yeah, she's totally in Baby Boom, and she also plays Randa in Teen Witch in 87. She steps into Steve's past and asks him why his dad was being hard on him, and he explains that his dad wants him to fit in. Julie picks up Steve's book, which is The Stranger by Compass, and tells him that if he wants to fit in, he should read Teen Beat before they walk into Springwood High.
Yeah. Yeah, this episode actually bothers me in a lot of ways, but we'll get to it soon.
So in class, Mr. Smithers, played by Michael Keenan, he comes to Freddy's nightmares, having been in WKRP Cincinnati, St. Elsewhere, and he was in Star Trek Voyager, Next Generation, and Deep Space Nine.
Ooh, he's one of those.
So he reviews the students' assignments, which was making a table and passing out various grades to them. He comes to Steve, who basically has a pile of junk assembled in front of him, and asks him, what is this as a table? Mr. Smither then asks him why he didn't follow the assignment, and Steve states, it's art. If everyone made tables, there'd be nothing to put on them.
Which, I respect this kid's hustle.
I gotta say. So Mr. Smithers replies with F is in failure, F is in summer school, and walks off. Steve's friend, played by Matt, played by Billy Morissette, he was in Family Ties. He played a frat boy in Penn & Teller Get Killed.
Oh, who didn't?
Ghoulies Go to College. And my personal favorite and recognition is he is Maz Mazzaline in Pump Up the Volume. He's the bad kid that causes all the shit in Pump Up the Volume.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you are. You love your Pump Up the Volume.
I love that movie. Yeah. If you have not seen Pump Up the Volume with Christian Slater, it is it's so good.
I mean, it's good even if you can't watch it with Christian Slater in the room.
So he asks Steve, why does he do these things? Steve replies in his the voices in his head told him to be creative. Matt, disgusted, goes off to walk, but Steve grabs him and begs him to forge his mother's signature so Steve can get out of detention.
No, he needs to forge the principal's
signature.
Yeah.
Because his mom is the principal's secretary, and he knows her. He knows his signature, and he's done it 100 times. Matt hesitates, stating that they're going to get busted, but Steve argues if he gets caught, Riley will kill him. Matt adds he should do things right just for once, and Steve tells him that if he does that, his dad's going to be mad at him because he can't pick up his brother.
Yeah.
So Matt goes to write the note, and then his mom interrupts him, played by his mom, Janice Taylor, who was played by Nora Masterson. She was in Full House, Quantum Leap, Murder, She Wrote, surprises both the boys to let Steve know that Principal Riley would like to see him again. Steve questions what it could be for this time, since it's only first period, and Janice tells him not to keep the principal waiting as she drags him off. And the camera then pans over to what was Steve's sculpture, which has now been modded into a familiar face as Freddy Krueger comes to life in his domain.
Hold on.
Yes.
It's like a bronze head.
Yes.
And honestly, the first thought that came to my mind when I saw it was it looked like a cursed artifact.
Yes.
It looked like an artifact, a regular artifact, from a cursed version of Legends of the Hidden Temple.
Yes, yeah. I thought the same thing.
The silver monkey, the bronze child molester.
If you have not seen kids try to put together the bronze monkey compilation on YouTube, sad.
You must put together the bronze Freddy, but don't let the temple guards catch you.
So the camera pans over to the sculpture. Freddy comes to life and says, "This time I'm sending Steve to the principal's office for a little higher education. You know, I always say, spare the blade, spoil the child."
He really does always say that.
He does always say that. And to keep in mind, his head has been removed from his body and is on two pieces of wood. His claws come into frame and tap a bandsaw.
No, his claws come into frame at the front of the screen. Like, it's completely detached from his body. Yeah. That's like the best part, I guess. I guess the idea is that the saw cut off his head.
Oh, we'll talk about Freddy in this episode, because what the hell?
I know, because usually he's so modest, yeah, and makes so much sense.
Entirely.
You know? Yeah.
So in Principal Riley's office, Steve tells Janice he's missing English and begins to sweet talk her, saying how they're reading the Scarlet Letter and he wrote an essay on how Hester was the first American feminist and he'd like to date a woman like that. Of course, Janice is not amused or won over by his brag, and she tells Steve to take a seat. The principal will be with him shortly. Steve adds that at least Hester knew what she did wrong and sits down, popping on his shades, and begins to doze off. He awakens to hear Principal Riley speaking to his father. Worried, Steve gets up and rushes to the door, but is stopped by Riley as we meet him, played by James Harper. He's in movies such as Armageddon, Down Periscope, and also another DS9 rep.
Oh, yeah. Star Trek was like the place to work if you were a working character actor, especially. Yeah. There was always a gig on Star Trek.
I can imagine. He tells Steve that they're ready for him, and he enters to find his father sitting in the room looking upset. Steve tells his dad it's all a mistake, and his father reminds him, "I said I didn't have time for this anymore." Principal Riley places his hands on Steve's shoulder and tells him that he likes him, but due to the nature of this incident, he wanted to review his record before the authorities arrive.
Ooh.
Steve questions the authorities, and Riley goes on to state it's not his grades or his tardiness that's the issue, but Steve's violation of school spirit.
Yeah, that was the moment when I started to go, I'm on Steve's team, and I hate these bastards.
So, commenting on the way he's dressed, he asks Steve, is he happy here? Steve states he is, and Riley adds, then why can't he get along with everyone, before asking his father if he seems happy at home, or is he argumentative as well? Blaming others for his failures, Sam Dart states that Steve has never been normal, and he's only the only one who didn't shed a tear at their mother's funeral.
Ugh.
Steve argues that that didn't mean he didn't care and he loved his mother. Principal Riley interrupts them, stating they're going to have to take drastic measures after this little incident. Mr. Dart stands up and tells Riley to do what he has to do, and he'll take care of Steve in his own way at home. Principal Riley begins to review Steve's record and shakes his head, realizing he's not paying attention. Steve gets up and leaves the office.
So at this point, he ends up on the rough streets of Springwood. Which, did you notice the music cues were very They Live-y?
Yes.
Kind of like doom, doom.
I was literally listening to the Sean Carpenter anthology on the way over here, because after watching this episode, I had those themes in my head.
All it made me realize, Dave.
What's that?
John Nada origin story. That's what this is. So, they never name Nada. That's why
true.
He's called John Nada. It's like John Doe. For those who are uninitiated, that's Rowdy Roddy Piper's mm-hmm. character in They Live. They call him John Nada because he actually just has no name.
Yeah.
In fact, that's one of my favorite things about that movie, is when it's over, you realize never once did he say what his name was, or anybody ask him what his name was. John Nada.
Such a good movie.
Anyway, so he's walking along these streets, and boy, this is very, similar to the rough streets where that one girl got dropped off, you know, to be violated.
Yeah.
For laughs the sorority sisters.
We're over these dark streets. Police radios are chiming in that they have an APB out for Steve, that he's 5'8", 140 pounds, wearing a black coat. Steve's wandering through alleys, trying not to be seen by the city as it seems completely empty. Suddenly behind him, police beacons light up and begin to chase Steve down the street, only to reveal that also a school bus is now decked in police beacons as well.
School bus is what is chasing him.
Yeah.
And what's written on the side of that school bus?
I didn't write that. What is it?
You didn't write it down?
No, I didn't see that.
The side of the bus says Springwood Kid Catcher.
Kid Catcher, that's right. No, I didn't.
Which, Freddie's going to be mad they stole his nickname.
They probably stole his bus. It's like, hey, wait a minute.
Hey, put the good diesel in that, baby.
So
she's been real good to me.
Steve runs down the street, ducking into a building. The bus stops and shines a light in, trying to find Steve, but he's hiding. The bus then pulls away, and Steve stands up, but is suddenly grabbed from someone unseen from behind him, pulling him into a building and shutting the door.
Oh, my. Now the plot thickens.
Oh, boy, does it.
So, like a pea soup on the stove.
Have to be Dead Poets Society of the Lost Boys is what I was calling it.
Jeez, I mean, fair enough.
So, Steve is next seen walking with Tony, played by Mitch Carter. He played Greg in Savage Streets, the one that initiates Linnea Streets Quigley.
Oh, yeah.
He's also the radio preacher voice in Children of the Corn.
Huh, yeah. Okay, that's a deep cut.
And he's also in The First Power.
Well, that just makes sense. Everybody should be in The First Power.
It's not the last time I'm going to mention The First Power in this episode.
I am happy.
So, Steve thanks Tony for pulling him in off the street and adding he thinks that he is thanking him. Steve and Tony walk into an area with multiple teen boys sitting and standing around fire barrels and broken down furniture, establishing this to kind of be a hideaway for the Springwood outcasts.
And I like that it's like these are the kids that the system failed,
yeah,
and somehow Freddie didn't kill.
Didn't kill them, yeah.
So they're like failed by every system, yeah, for kids in Springwood.
So Tony hands Steve a paper to throw into the fire barrel, which is Steve's math test that he got a C on. Tony adds that they don't have grades here, and Steve interjects that he thanks him, but he's got to go back and straighten things out. Tony tells him that he can't go back and shows him the barracks where he'll be sleeping. He introduces Steve to Wendy and Alex, stating that Steve is another behavior problem, and he adds they're down here because they're reminders that the system doesn't have everything under control.
Yeah. And their reasons for being down there are weird. Did you write them down?
I have one. One was left-handed for Tony.
Yeah. He was left-handed, and that's why he was
one
there.
One was from Greece, I think, was
something like that.
Alex,
yeah.
And I didn't get what Wendy's was. Like, this, yeah, there's a like, lot of information. They were like,
one kid fights, one kid's bad at math, one kid has a left-handed. that's literally what
it's like. So, Steve tries to rack his brain on something that he's done that led him to this. Tony tells him that they want to weed the weirdos out. Steve realizes this means no more school, and tells Tony that he wants to sign up for this group. Tony tells him that he has to prove himself and hands Steve a shotgun, which is the same shotgun from Mother's Day, mind you.
Now, before we get into this, I want to talk about school for a second.
Yes.
Because you see, David.
Yes.
You are a baby. You're 30. I'm 36. I'm your elder,
mm-hmm,
and you'll respect me as such.
We'll see.
When I was in school,
yeah,
I was in middle school when Columbine happened, the, mm-hmm, school shooting.
Yeah.
And that was a real issue,
mm-hmm,
that the faculty would use this new fear of students to get rid of the difficult kids.
Yeah.
Not just the weird ones and the odd ducks, but kids who were performing low, mm-hmm, educationally, kids who were getting bad grades, kids who were getting into fights, obviously, kids who were all these things. They would use that as an excuse, and that became, in many schools, including my own,
yeah,
a huge issue where parents were confronting the faculty and saying, like, I think you don't want to put up with my son,
mm-hmm,
so you're claiming this zero tolerance policy. My son is not a school shooter. My son is a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I got mistreated for dressing weird to the point where I was almost expelled for dressing, for clothes.
I got profiled for a trench coat in high school.
Well, oh, we weren't allowed to have them at all.
Yeah.
There was no, oh, you have a trench coat, let's talk to you. No, that you weren't allowed to have trench coats or backpacks.
Jeez, that's ridiculous.
For a few years.
Oh, my God.
For a few years, no backpacks. And they made us wear IDs around our necks.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Oh, you guys didn't do that?
No.
We had to wear photo IDs around our necks on a lanyard every day. And if you didn't have it, you had to go to the office and pay $5. No, I think it was $2 for a day pass.
That is insane.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Well, security was... You also didn't have gang violence in your high school.
No, you've expressed to me that your school was not...
It wasn't like...
Not like the substitute.
It wasn't like the substitute, but we had some issues.
Yeah.
So all I'm saying is, I mean, he's not wrong. The system fails people who don't fit in.
Yeah.
And I am one of those people.
I would agree.
Thank you, I think. I don't know.
Bitch.
Luckily, I figured out that there are plenty of ways to earn good money,
yeah,
without an education. No, not that.
Says you.
You know what? I'm about to kick your ass out of here. Anyway, I just wanted to mention that I had a flashback to that memory when they said, you know, they're just getting rid of the unwanted.
Well, and to piggyback off of your comments real quick, if there's one movie that was like coming to mind the whole time that they were talking about all this stuff in regards of failing the students, remember the movie Teachers that I showed you several years back with Nick Nolte? That's a great example of what was going on at those times too, with them completely failing kids out in the sense that they would give them the grades to pass them even though they just didn't want to deal with them.
I have friends who graduated high school, which I did not, that were unable to read. That's how the system can push you through.
Yeah.
It literally, at some point, you're just a turd.
Yeah.
That they want to lay in a toilet somewhere. And
sadly.
No, I mean, and I'm not saying that that's the way it is today, but I'm saying that, and my school wasn't that bad. I didn't go to like an inner city school, really. Yeah. I kind of did, but I didn't really go to an inner city school. But like, they fail people all the time. So anyway, they got a shotgun.
So he hands him a shotgun. Tony tells Steve to fire when ready, revealing that Principal Riley is now tied to one of the fire barrels in front of him.
And I just want to say that principal looks like he could use a couple of 12-gauge air holes. I'm just saying.
So Riley tells Steve that he's not like them and that he doesn't have to do this. Tony tells Steve that if he doesn't have to conform, he shouldn't have to be like everybody else. Riley argues there's nothing wrong with a little conformity.
And that's when I say, enough of this jibber-jabber, get with smoking this principal.
Riley tells Steve if he has someone to blame, it's Steve's parents. Tony tells Steve to pull the trigger and tells him that it'll be no more school, no more books, no more teachers, dirty looks.
And they start repeating that.
Yes.
No more school, no more books, no more teachers, dirty looks.
Which is, of course, the lyrics to School's Out by Alice Cooper. Just got to throw that out.
Oh, that's gross. And then, they, like, the principal saying, like, no, who you really want to deal with is your father. And all I'm thinking is, like, who are you, Freud? Sitting over here. No, you're not mad at me. You just want to have sex with your mom. You know, that's what it really is. It's like, okay, you are clearly overeducated to be a principal.
So Steve suddenly lowers the gun as everyone suddenly around him has vanished, and he looks back to see Riley is still tied down and asks him why he said to kill his father. Riley adds he's the problem, and he most likely worked his mother to death. Steve takes aim again, but can't go through with it, instead setting Riley free. Riley tells Steve he did the right thing and to get them out of there before they find out he cut them loose, or they're both going to be dead. Riley and Steve begin to run down the alley and come out to the area where the school bus is parked. Steve escorts Riley to the bus, backing away, but Riley suddenly grabs Steve, throwing him inside the bus, telling him he should have shot him when he had the chance.
Sell out. That's what you get. That's what you deserve for sparing that principal.
Steve bangs on the bus doors as they close, driving off. Riley waves, but suddenly then morphs into Mr. Dart.
Oh, man. That's some hefty stuff. Yeah. He's your father. He's your principal. He's your father. He's your principal. They've been really playing up the teen anxiety these last few episodes.
They really have. That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
And
Because it's like you have last week's episode where they had the whole thing of basically growing up and running away from home to try and think that it's going to be better. This week, we're focusing solely on how if you don't do well in school, you're fucked for life.
Yes. Yes. Well, and the whole like, are you ready to have a baby? Are you ready to do all? It's very, very teen nightmare.
It's Freddie being like, I'm going to make you wish you weren't born.
Here's the tax code. You're like, oh, man.
So Steve wakes up, realizes he's back in Riley's office waiting outside, but he calls out to Janice, the secretary, but the school is empty. So he begins to search around, makes his way into Smithers' classroom, and he finds Matt along with four other boys and Julie standing in a line. Matt tells Steve he doesn't fit in, he's odd with his clothes, his ideas, and his behavior, and no wonder they're after him. Steve runs to the end of the line and confronts Julie, asking what is wrong with everyone. Julie states she's proud to be a member of the Future Homemakers of America as they learn domestic skills and raise money for worthwhile charities. Picking up a donation can, she begins to repeat in robotic nature, please pledge what you can, please pledge what you can. He runs back to Matt and asks what they've done. Matt adds nothing. He's an integrated part of his community. Suddenly, we hear Riley's voice echoes to an unseen person about seeing a new line that they've just created. Steve forces Riley to duck down with him and hide as forces Matt to hide with him. Riley enters demonstrating a machine that spits out students who conform. We see Smithers pushing the bad kids into the machine and then pan across the machine that's made up of saws, presses, buttons, switches, also dripping with blood out
There's
of one
blood everywhere. It's just a giant grinder, yeah. Which is 100% how I see public school.
That's very true.
I'm not even being funny. Grinder no. and all. That's how I see it.
Seeing with his eyes, Steve is in disbelief and tells Matt they have to run. Offering his hand, Steve takes it, pulling off his hand to reveal Matt is a robot as wires protrude from the stump and the severed hand, which also starts to spew blood.
And finally, we get robots. It took, what, 15 episodes?
15 episodes.
We haven't had a robot yet, I don't believe. Oh, did we?
The chick with the metal plate, because she was kind of
you're right.
robotic.
No, that was my bad.
Yeah.
Yep. Thank you, Freddy's Nightmares, for not disappointing.
Steve is reporting to Steve. He's a robot, the very best robot that he can be. Riley walks down the line and stops Julie, plucking her eyes out, stating that there's a flaw in her cranium design. He throws the eyes to the side, and they slide into the view of Steve and just start, like, rolling back and forth.
Yes.
And then we get a close-up of Julie without eyes in her sockets, and it's really disturbing.
Why would you find that disturbing?
I don't know why. It just was.
Oh, that's weird. That must be a you thing.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah.
So the eyes are rotating back and forth. Riley tells the assistants that he doesn't have the ability to make fully integrated robot students because some of them act squirrely and unpredictable. He stops in front of Steve, who is posing in the lines of the robots, stating that some are squirrely, as he said. Then he suddenly sees that Steve is not a robot. He tells Riley he's going to report him to the school board, calling him a butcher. Riley puts his hand suddenly on the back of Steve's neck, turns a knob that shuts Steve down. Riley then has Smithers throw Steve into the machine. He's ground up and remade. Riley plucks Steve's glasses out of the bloody chute and laughs.
His cool kid sunglasses.
Yeah, his shades.
Yep.
So suddenly Steve wakes up back in Riley's office to his name being called. Steve takes off his sunglasses as Riley steps out and asks what he's doing here. Steve tells him that he was told he wanted to see him, but Principal Riley states no, he wanted to see Mr. Dark.
Yeah, they got the wrong guy.
Stating the damn computer spit out the wrong name again. Principal Riley apologizes and Steve interrupts, telling him no need to worry, he's learned his lesson and they won't even notice him anymore, as he drops his sunglasses into the wastebasket. Riley looks puzzled as Steve leaves, and we cut back to Smithers' class.
No, you go ahead. Okay. No, I've got a point to make, but yeah. I want to make sure I have
the
cuts right
back to Smithers' class. The students now have sculptures that are being graded like Steve had in the opening scene. Smithers gives Steve an A+.
So I want to say something.
Yeah.
So Freddy's convincing a kid to
you.
Follow the
Thank
rules
you.
And conform.
Thank you.
Jesus Christ, Krueger. Can't you just go back to molesting and murdering them? Can't you just go back to trying to nuke the entire planet? Spare us literal suffering. I'm not prepared for Freddy to be this level of evil.
It's evil.
Like before, he just, you know,
killed you,
raped a child and killed them.
Yeah.
Like now it's like he literally destroyed everything that was creative and interesting
about this
kid.
Yeah.
And now the kid is going to just lighten up and fly right. And that's it. We never see him
again.
Never
see him again. He's not even in the B-store. Yeah. I was shocked.
Because he straightened up and flied right. That is literally the scariest that Freddy Krueger has ever been.
So
ever.
Episode, the A story ends as we cut to Freddy, who's holding a figure, an action figure doll. He slams it down, breaking the head off and states, that's how you break somebody's spirit.
Oh,
laughing
my God.
And disappears.
Freddy is... Wow.
And that's the end of the A story.
I don't say this. Maybe I say this all the time on the show, but
Yeah. Yeah.
I cannot.
It's one thing, like you said, for him to be just like the murderer that he is. It's another thing for him to completely take a kid and just take everything about him.
It's like, could you at least slit his throat at the end so he doesn't have to live this way? My God.
And then once we get into the B story here in a second, it's like total opposite for that outcome.
So we're about to go into the B story. For those uninitiated, Freddy's Nightmares has a very strange format in that it has an A and a B story, but they're not intertwined.
No.
The A story is the first half, the B story is the second half, and they do share characters often, but they're often not completely continuous.
Yeah.
So we're getting ready to start the B story now, which sometimes it's actually gotten a little bit better, but sometimes it's very jarring.
Very different.
This time, not so much, because in this B story, the lead character is his best friend.
Yes. So the B story begins as we see Matt's parents, Janice and Roy. Roy's played by Frank Coppock. He was in Father of the Bride, Tales from the Crypt, The Last Boy Scout. They're both standing on the porch, waiting as she states she can't stand the waiting anymore, adding, what if Matt didn't do well? Roy adds he did fine, he studied hard for the SATs, and Janice adds that his whole future depends on these scores. A mail truck pulls into the driveway, but then suddenly transforms into a white limousine from the opening scene.
They're getting the most out of that limo rental, I'll tell you that much.
Three babes emerge from the limo wearing shirts that spell out S-A-T as Matt emerges from the limo roof in shades, a leather jacket, holding an electric
just
guitar.
Holding a guitar, not like he's going to play it,
nope,
just holding it by the neck.
States, I aced the SATs like I said I would. His parents celebrate as we cut to Matt, who's in Mr. Smithers' class, revealing that that was all a dream.
Right.
Mr. Smithers asks Matt if he's nervous as he caught him not paying attention. Matt states he doesn't know why everyone's making such a big deal about the SATs, because it's not like if they blow them, they have to move out onto the street, apply for food stamps. It's just a multiple choice test.
Yeah.
Mr. Smithers tells Matt it's not life or death, but it's the closest thing to it in high school.
And clearly he's new to Springwood High.
Yeah.
Because, spoiler alert, you know, there's a lot of life and death in Springwood.
Dude, I hope we get an episode with the attendance taker at the high school where it's just like, oh, well, like seven of them are missing.
Well, the reason you don't see him is he has to work 7 minutes a day. So you don't catch him.
So Mr. Smither, class ends as the bell chimes. The students file out as the camera zooms into a flame on a Bunsen burner. We are then in Freddy's domain as he's caressing the top of two skulls before putting his weight on the hand, crushing the top of one. He picks up the skull dust and wipes it from his hand, stating, some people just can't take the pressure. And that's it.
But, you know, I mean, at least it was interesting visually, and at least Freddy didn't destroy someone's spirit and celebrate. I never thought Freddy could be more evil.
Dude, I know. Rewatching it today, I was like, that's a really fucked up ending.
He's so evil. Like, but there are episodes where he's like, now you've learned to be nicer to your mom.
Yeah.
Anyway, now you'll give up on living. It's like, oh my God, Freddy. Like, I feel like we're going to get later into the episodes of Freddy be like, aha, now you'll be the Joker. You know, just, just thanks, Fred. Oh my God.
So Matt and Julie are walking down the steps of the school discussing the SATs. Matt asks her if he doesn't follow her to college, would it make any difference? Julie states, not to me, but it will to you, and reminds Matt it's only a test and he shouldn't let the pressure get to him. Matt adds that his parents are really pushing on him about it and he's not sure that he even wants to go through with it, but Julie adds there's nothing to worry about. They're going to do great, go to college, get great jobs, and have a two-income family, be the perfect dink couple.
Yeah, double income, no kids.
Double income, no kids. That's what he asks, and that's what she says. He also adds that he sent out his music demo, and if the record company wants him, he'll have no time for school. Julie says if he doesn't make a top 40, he better make a top college.
It's not clever at all.
She tells him to stop worrying and walks off. Matt then sees a sign on the bulletin board at the school that says, Matt Taylor chokes on multiple choice exam, but he looks back and realizes it actually just states, SAT exams tomorrow, be there.
I'm so glad I dropped that out of high school.
It's like Sunday,
but it won't be Sunday. Maybe, I don't know. What day do you take SATs?
Typically a Saturday, I think. I took them once.
What was your SAT score?
I don't remember because...
How can you not remember?
Because I didn't care. Like, it was one of those things where I had enough to pass. I had enough to get into college.
I don't think passing is how SATs work.
I got like a 1200, I think.
Ooh, I don't know how the... I don't know. Is that good?
That's what I'm saying. I think. Like, I did, like, C average. Like, I had the option to take them again and decided not to because it didn't really weigh in on what I needed. Like, I had a passing grade on the SATs. That's what my college required, and then my college ripped me off, so it's
so what
fine.
You're saying is you had the bare minimum necessary
damn
to get...
Damn fucking get right,
I did. Oh, right. I'm proud of it. Oh, it's okay. I've never taken an SAT. I did.
Yeah.
Not to brag, I did pass the proficiency tests on a one go.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And for those who don't know, and I don't know if it's changed, but when I was in high school, you had to pass all the proficiencies, and then you had to get your credit hours, and that's how you graduated. So I did actually... passed my proficiency tests when I was a freshman, which I was not expecting. I passed my math with 5% above like the passing threshold. So, because I assumed, I'll have to take math again next year. Because the way it works is you take a proficiency every year until you pass all of them.
Yep.
Except I passed all of them in one go.
There you go.
But then I had this attitude where I was like, seriously, let me just get out of here.
Yeah.
Because the proficiency test is damn near the GED.
Yeah. That's what I've heard.
Not that I ever got a GED. Which is, by the way, one of my favorite things people ask me, because I will proudly state I am a high school dropout, and people will be like, well, you got your GED, right? And I'll look them dead in the face and be like,
no.
No, and why would I? Like, well, you might need it. And I'd be like, for what? I haven't had a day job in 8 years, but my last day job, the minimum requirement was a high school diploma. And I worked there for 3 years.
That sounds about right.
When they asked me, where did you go to high school? I told him. They never asked me, did you graduate high school? They said, where did you go? Then they gave me an application because I interviewed first. Long story.
Yeah.
I interviewed first. So they gave me, they were like, make sure to fill out this application, but you got the job. So I just never filled it out because the application would have revealed I was a high school dropout.
There you go.
Worked there for 3 years. Was only fired because I was insubordinate, not because I was stupid.
So he sees the sign, says SAT exams tomorrow. He sinks down in the hall as we cut to his room where he's hard at work studying on math problems about nuts.
Ah, yes. All about D's nuts.
So Matt states he hates nuts and closes the book, putting on his headphones and putting his head back. He goes into what we can assume is a nap, except we see Janice, his mother, carrying food into the dining room with Matt, Julie, Roy, and Fred Giles, who is played by J. Patrick McNamara. Now, do you know that name?
J. Patrick McNamara?
McNamara, yeah.
McNamara.
Yeah.
I know the last name McNamara.
So he's in Blowout.
Oh, okay, with John Travolta.
Yes, he also plays the psychologist in Phantasm 2. But ooh, where you and I definitely recognize him from, he's Mr. Preston in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and Bogus Journey.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's so, what's up.
He tells that they have known him so long that they can call him Fred. He's been working with Mr. Taylor at the bank for some time. Matt tells his dad that he runs a janitorial service.
Yeah, because his dad's like, you don't have to be a janitor. Like, yeah. He's like, you own a janitorial service. And I say, good on you for having a good blue collar business.
So Roy adds that he never went to college though, and that's why Matt is going to be the first one. Matt adds, depends on the SATs, and Fred states, that's what we know, you're going to do great on them, which is why he's agreed to conduct his college interview.
Man, you know, Dave, did your dad go to college?
No, he went to finishing school, basically.
You know, yeah. The big disappointment in my family was I was supposed to be the first man in the family to go to college, not in prison. Mm. I mean, because the... that's where my father got his 2 years of college was while he was serving time.
I knew that, but I don't know how to respond.
You shouldn't. You shouldn't, you little perfect bitch.
So,
his mom and dad are still married. I'm just teasing.
Back to the show. Janice requests Matt to pass Julie the ham. As she hands him the tray, Janice suddenly breaks into a math problem about the slices of ham and how much will be left and the average chew time that Julie had to consume.
Yeah, it was something like if she chews 8 times per bite or whatever, it was great. It was just a perfect SAT question.
So dumbfounded, Matt looks back at her and states he doesn't know the answer. His mom, now puzzled, asks what he means, stating that she just asked him to pass it to Julie. Fred then pipes up, stating he's looking forward to giving Matt a good college recommendation as it is success before breaking into a multiple choice question about math. Matt sits again and states to and stares at Roy till Roy pipes up, asking him if he heard what Fred had said. Fred asks Matt, what is he going to major in? Math? Business? Matt adds that he was thinking music because that makes him happy. Fred then questions it for a future banker, and Matt adds again, it makes him happy, to which Fred responds, sad.
Can Matt, you major in just math?
Some
I would assume it would have to be, I would assume it would have to be like something other than just math.
That's a good question. I need to look that up.
I mean, like, I just never hear of anybody saying, I'm an algebra major.
Yeah.
I'm like,
well,
okay. But I hear like, I'm a business major. I'm an accounting major. Yeah. I'm a, you know,
I have a doctorate in math.
I'm boring. Yeah, just stuff like that.
So he says sad. Fred responds with happy. Matt states that he's a bit overtired, and Fred responds rested. Matt asks, why is he stating the opposite of what he's saying and making him nervous? Fred replies, calm. Matt asks him to stop. Fred says, go. Matt says, this isn't funny. And Fred shouts, serious. Matt states, cut that out. And Fred replies, in. Janice interrupts, asking Matt if something is wrong. Matt looks back at Fred and he states he shouldn't be grilling him about college because he still has to take his SATs to think about. His mom asks him to get him some coffee. He walks over to the coffee pot and looks back, dropping the mug, shattering it, to see that all four of them are now on the floor in a rectangle formation.
Julie of pipes their bodies.
Up. Yeah. Julie pipes up and tells Matt it's a math problem and asks him about the area of the rectangle that they formed. Matt states out loud that he doesn't know, and we cut back to the table completely normal, but now everyone is staring directly at him.
I love this entire sequence.
I thought for a second that they were all dead. Like, I thought, that's where we were going. Then she sits up and is like, it's a math problem.
Yeah. Oh, my. It's so good. It's so good.
Janice reassures him it's okay. It's just a coffee cup. She offers up dessert to make him feel better. And Fred comments, that pie looks delicious and it's cut into triangles. What's the measurements of them? Giving him another question. Matt stares off and Fred snaps his fingers, telling him he's got to be quicker. He's got to be faster. As Matt begins to cough, Fred looks over to Roy and says, your boy has a tendency to choke, before getting up from the table and walking over to Matt, pulling his head up, stating it's never too late to cram for an exam, as he removes the top of Matt's head and starts stuffing papers into them with a vacuum sound.
No, he's not just stuffing. It is a vac. It's like sucking the paper in. I laughed so hard I had to pause it.
Yeah.
And rewind, because it's literally, you just see the back of his head and the top comes off and it's just whoo, and it's just sucking the paper.
Literally,
down
he it. Lifts it up. You hear the vacuum kick on and we're just watching him toss papers into this thing for a solid 10 seconds.
I've never been happier.
So Matt wakes up to his mom entering the room, offering some food to him. She comments that he looks terrible and he should get some rest so he can be sharp for the test tomorrow. Matt comments that he wishes it was over and she reassures him it's going to be okay.
Does she, though?
Oh, she does.
Because will it?
The next day, Matt and Julie sit in Smithers' class as he instructs them to break the seals for their SAT test. Julie comments he looks awful, and Matt replies he didn't get any sleep. She wishes him good luck as they begin to take the test. Matt's visions, though, begin to blur in and out. We then cut back to the classroom as Matt and Julie are hard at work on their tests. Smithers walks over as the bell rings, telling the class it's time and to put their pencils down. Matt looks sure he's done well, and he looks relieved. Julie and Matt walk out talking about how they did and going over some questions. Matt seems pretty sure of himself, and Julie is convinced he did well and things are fine as they talk about their futures once again.
Yeah. I like when kids in Springwood talk about their futures. That's my favorite.
So Matt questions, does everything boil down to the stupid test? Suddenly, a gunshot echoes as the camera zooms into a dead student who's in his car, who shot himself and written on the car, I am my SAT score, 400, in his own blood.
Yeah. And then it's revealed that it was just the car backfiring.
It was an Uncle Buck moment.
Yeah.
So Matt double takes and sees the student is fine. The car drives off. Julie kisses Matt and leaves as Matt is next seen being interviewed by Fred, who comments on his sport and academic success. He asks Matt, is his SATs going to be great? Commenting that it is pure magic and what they can do for his life and how his future will turn him into a player.
Oh, yeah.
Suddenly, the bookcase behind them in the room goes to the side behind Matt and reveals a room that Fred invites him into, which is a nice office with a pretty secretary. Fred adds, good SAT scores mean you're in control. The phone rings on Matt's desk and he answers it. Matt tells Fred the caller is begging for another month to pay their mortgage that he's foreclosing on. Fred asks them, why don't you see what they did on their SAT scores? So Matt asks them and finds out it was barely a 900. Fred asks him to do you think those people would make it in this life? Matt apologizes, refuses them before hanging up. Fred reminds him that if he blows his SAT scores, all of this goes away, snapping his fingers, and suddenly we see Matt in dirty clothes picking out of a trash can in Springwood's alley.
There we go.
We cut back to reality. As Matt sits with Fred, who reminds him how important the scores are, stating the difference between the penthouse and the outhouse.
I like that it was the outhouse because I thought he was the difference between the penthouse or the poorhouse.
Yeah.
The outhouse. Yeah. So, yeah, that's the good stuff.
We then see Julie pulling up in front of Matt's house, stating she got a 1520 out of 1600. Matt comments that she got a grand slam, and Julie adds if she got a 1520, he must have gotten a perfect score.
Yeah, because he was killing it. That's what his own words. He was like, I was really in the zone.
Tony suddenly calls from Julie's front seat, telling her to come on. Matt asks why Tony is in the front seat riding with Julie and states that they're going to go winter clothes shopping together. A mailman comes into view suddenly walking up the driveway with the SAT scores in his hand, but we pan to reveal it's a grinning Principal Riley.
Yes, Principal Riley is the postman, which, by the way, good that he has to moonlight working to make his ends meet.
Exactly.
Should have done better on his SATs, I guess.
I guess so. Matt double takes and realizes it's not Riley as the mailman hands the scores over to Matt.
Now, hold on, though.
Yeah.
As the mailman transforms into a black gentleman who's just like,
he's just
and then hands
there,
it
like,
to somebody, else.
Somebody else.
That made him look like a racist, right? I'm not the only one that's
a little bit.
Yeah, for that poor mailman's just there like. You're looking right at me. Will you take this letter I'm trying to hand you?
So it's not Riley. It's a black gentleman, and he gets the scores from him and realizes that it's an 800 score combined, and he bombed his SATs. Julie and his parents suddenly disperse immediately as Matt tries to argue it's just a test. He's still a good person. We see Julie pull out of the driveway, and Roy slam the door shut in Matt's face.
Yeah, his parents like lock him out of the house.
He tries to go get the door. It's locked. We next see text appear that says 1 year later, which I couldn't fucking believe that we were getting a 1 year later on Freddy's Nightmare.
I could, because anything is possible in Freddy's Nightmares.
So we see Matt, now dressed as a janitor at Springwood High. Tony and Julie enter with other students, Mr. Smithers' classroom. They comment on remembering this place and that the site of the great SAT scores. Julie goes to ask a question, not realizing it's him. Matt turns around to see Julie and Tony. Tony comments that it's good to see he got a job, and Matt adds he doesn't do this normally, but his father is sick, so he's filling in.
Ha ha! Matt is a laborer, a member of the proletariat. How pathetic. He has to wear a thing, like a shirt, and he has to clean stuff instead of just existing until he gets fired and he doesn't know why.
So Matt asks,
he's not a cog in a machine,
if he and Julie can get together sometime and he'll give her all the Springwood gossip. Julie informs him that they're only in town for the day, but maybe next time.
We don't associate with the poor.
So the group leave as Matt is alone in the classroom again. He is frustrated and throws a broom, breaking a microscope. Matt returns then to his parents' house, finding all the furniture on the lawn being moved out. Inside the house, we see Roy is on bed rest with Janice, basically in a coma, it looks like.
Yeah, he's like dying.
And standing by him is Fred, who tells them they've missed the mortgage payment. Janice adds that Roy has worked for him for over 20 years. How can he do this? And Fred states, oh, he did a great job, but that was then, and this is now.
Yeah.
Janice begs him to wait for Matt because his paycheck can pay the mortgage. Fred says that could be hours. Suddenly, Matt emerges and is told by his mother they're being foreclosed on and she needs his check. Matt informs her of the accident of him breaking the microscope and that he lost the account and they don't have the check. Janice begs Fred, but tells him that without the school account, there's no way that they can pay the mortgage. Suddenly, Roy begins to flatline and dies right there in the room.
Ah, well, that's one problem solved.
Janice cries and tells Matt that it's all because of his SATs. Suddenly, an alarm sounds as Matt wakes up on his bed. He's in his room, and everything's fine. He goes downstairs, grabs some milk and cereal, but is suddenly surprised by his parents, Julie, and friends with an envelope containing his SAT scores. He opens them up and finds out that he did great as Julie embraces him, but suddenly the school bell rings.
Uh-oh.
And we are back in Smithers' classroom.
You're saved by the something.
Waking up, Matt to reveal he fell asleep during the test and has missed the chance to take it, basically flunking his SATs.
Oh, man. Like, how you like me now, you know?
Matt runs up to Smithers explaining he fell asleep and he needs to take them again. Mr. Smithers tells him there's nothing he can do. Matt asks him why he didn't wake him up. He clearly saw him sleeping. Smithers tells him to take him once again next year. Matt begs him, stating he'll lose Julie, he'll lose his college interview, but Smithers tells him it's out of his hands.
Oh, he also says survival of the fittest.
Yeah,
let me tell you, that balding sack has every right to say survival of the fittest. I hope an alligator eats him on his way home.
So outside, Julie berates Matt for falling asleep during the test, asking him does he even care about college. Matt tells her that failing a test doesn't make him a failure, and the hell with it all, before tossing his textbook in the trash. Julie and Matt both walk separate directions until a black car comes into view as Matt sees...
a black limousine.
Was it a limousine?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A black limousine comes into view, pulling up in front of Matt. A woman exits, telling Matt that his demo was received by Splash Records and they want him now.
Darn tootin' they do.
Matt, of course, ecstatic, gets in the car, drives off as Smithers looks behind in amazement and disgust and almost just looks saddened.
Ha ha! Get in your shitbox car, public servant. You glare at the success of your student.
So, real quick before we cut to Freddy's outro, the woman who got out of the car was Warner Laughlin. She is an acting coach. She only had like 3 credits on her resume, but she has worked with the likes of Ryan Reynolds, George Lopez, Amy Adams, Zoe, and Emily Deschanel.
By law, I have to say, hell yeah, yeah. George Lopez. All right. This is not the first time George Lopez has come
been
up
mentioned
on the
show.
But I just want to say, it appears Freddy was really just punishing the teacher.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
So we cut to Freddy ending the episode as a claw comes into a dollhouse that is designed like the classroom. Freddy peeks in from the back, pushing one of the figures over, and states, "A mind is a terrible thing to waste," as he grabs the doll's head and begins to munch on it
for why about wouldn't he?
A solid 20 seconds, yeah, just chewing nom-nomming.
Really and not swallowing it, too, which is really funny. It's just falling out of his mouth.
So that is the end of School Days, Season 1, Episode 15.
And what an episode it was. The only thing that would have made it better is if Freddy himself had either taken or administered a test,
yeah.
I think.
Oh no. God. It's like we summoned him.
I don't. Oh, boy.
Thank you both for coming here today.
Oh, God.
Now, remember, the results of this test will have a major effect on your future.
What is going on?
Please sit down. Do not share your answers with any of the other students.
Okay, this is, pardon the pun, this is a nightmare to me.
Yeah, same.
Yes, that's very good, very good. Okay, do you have your number two pencils?
I don't have, wait, oh, I do have one right here.
I'm gonna
check your ass. Go
it's,
on.
It's there.
There it is. Yeah. Go on, get it out.
It's out.
Okay, okay. So what is this?
Shh, quiet. Roger has four worm burgers. Oh, he eats two and sells one. How many worm burgers does Roger have left? A, 3. B, 1. Or C, kill Roger in his dreams and he dies for real.
I'm going to go with C.
Are you sure?
I'm gonna go
I feel
with C.
like if he had, did you take away two and then you take away? I feel like that would be B.
It would be B, but I'm gonna go with C.
Really?
I think so.
Really?
All right.
I'm going with B. Dave's going with C.
Oh, very good. David, you were correct.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah.
You over there.
Yeah.
I would expect this. Luckily, we grade on a curve for Hispanics.
Holy shit!
Wow. Wow.
No, it's for your good. It's for your own good.
Freddy, what the fuck?
I am literally more evil than I have ever been.
You really are.
Yeah, no shit.
No shit.
Okay, number two.
Okay.
True or false? Brad Pitt is a total jerk for snubbing ever talking about his episode of Freddy's Nightmares.
I'm going to go with true.
I'm going to go with true.
I'm sorry. You're both wrong.
Oh.
The answer is true, bitch.
Oh my God, Freddy.
Did you
write this test or was it actually given to you?
I got true but with no bitch.
Yeah, true with no bitch.
Don't worry about that, Brownie. You'll be fine.
Jesus Christ, Freddy.
Cry about it. All right. Final question.
Okay, I guess I'm ready for that.
Ready for Freddy? All right, let's do it.
Lori Petty can run 9 miles per hour, and she runs for 7 hours a day. How many days would it take Lori Petty to run from Springwood to San Francisco, taking into account average weather? Hold on.
Okay.
A, 15 days. B, 47 days. Or C, Jason obviously lost because I winked at the end, which means I trapped him in a dream.
C.
I'm going to go with C, like 100% C.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Good job.
Thanks, Freddy.
Thanks, Freddy.
All right, you both get an F, but you get an F with a taco drawn on it.
Oh, my God. Freddy, out. Out. Go, Freddy.
Yeah. That kid gave up all his dreams.
All right. Thanks, Freddy.
Wow.
Thanks for that. Wow. Yeah.
That was all right. So let's just go ahead and cut into grade this episode.
The irony is that we're going to grade this episode.
Yeah.
Freddy, please stop. He's humming La Cucaracha as he. Okay. I'm going to go first on this one.
Right.
I'm going to give this an A. I actually loved this episode a lot.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and give this a B+.
Okay.
My only big issue with it was that Freddy's interactions were very short and limited.
But I loved what it had to say about the fact that Freddy is basically society crushing you.
Yeah.
I love that, and I love that at the end, it's just one big middle finger to the school system. Yeah. It's like, sorry, bitches, I'm famous now. And then that teacher's look at his face, so he's like mad that that kid's going to be successful. Yeah. It's like, ha ha, go home to your studio apartment, eat a lean cuisine, fucker.
So it's one of those, like, the best way I can describe it is how we've already talked about, it's a realistic nightmare for kids.
Yes.
And it's not like, it didn't go on any of the batshitness as much. It was not more so
yeah,
just
I would agree.
Realistic shit.
Yeah, it was very, very like a teenage nightmare. Yeah. So, and speaking of teenage nightmares, what do we have next week?
Oh, boy. I was hoping you would ask. So next week is season 1, episode 16, Cabin Fever. Now, the director you might have heard before, I mean, he might have some association with the show, a Mr. Robert Englund.
Robert Englund directed the episode?
Next week's episode, oh, directed by Robert Englund.
You all be sure to be here next Tuesday. as I like to say, we'll see you next Tuesday.
Yes.
But we got to get out of here.
Yes, we do.
So this has been David DeNoyer, or Double D as Goodbye. He's called. I'm Enrique Couto. And we are going to leave you with this. Thank you for listening.
Yes.
Welcome to Prime Time, a Freddy's Nightmares podcast. If you want to reach out and cut someone, you can email us at freddysnightmarespod@gmail.com or just go to freddysnightmares.com. We have cool merch and all kinds of things. And if you love the show and want to help us, just give us a subscribe and make sure you give us a star rating on your favorite podcasting app, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the like. But we will see you next week with old Robert Englund's personally directed episode.
Can't wait.
All right. Take care, everybody.
We'll see you.
La cucaracha, la cucaracha. No, 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 no.